Welcome to the Busy Gamer Podcast for the week of September 26th, 2010, providing a weekly summary of news and views from BusyGamerNews.com. We're a gaming site for people too busy for gaming sites.
This is our third and final Special PAX edition. Last week, we talked with reps for Epic Mickey, LEGO Universe, and Hydrophobia, and tried out the PlayStation Move.
The week before that, we picked apart Rock Band 3, Portal 2 Co-op, Fallout New Vegas, and Rascals.
This week, we'll wrap things up with Comic Jumper, Puzzle Agent, Torchlight 2, Bangio HD, and more.
But first,
this week's releases.
Dead Rising 2 and Front Mission Evolved for PC, PS3, and Xbox 360.
Guitar Hero Warriors of Rock for PS3, Xbox 360, and Wii.
Wii Party and Haunted House for Wii.
FIFA Soccer 11 for Nintendo DS, PS3, PS2, PSP, and Xbox 360. The Wii version is due the following week.
And Final Fantasy 14, the Standard Edition for PC.
This is the latest game release information we have. A more thorough summary will be posted Monday morning.
Last week's releases.
Civilization V, Darksiders, and Final Fantasy XIV Collector's Edition for PC.
F1 2010 for PS3 and Xbox 360.
Brunswick Pro Bowling and High Velocity Bowling for PS3 and Move.
And for iPhone and iPad, there's Gangstar, Miami Vindication, Pocket Frogs, Robot Unicorn Attack Heavy Metal, The Secret of Monkey Island Special Edition for iPad, Sims 3 Ambitions, and Time Crisis Second Strike.
For more complete listing of recent releases, please check our September 20th roundup on the site.
Giveaways.
Each week, we launch a giveaway we call Free Stuff Friday, though you normally have nearly a week to enter.
This week, we have some Halo relics. There's Halo 3, the Halo First Strike novel, some Halo console stickers, and a collectible Xbox Live headset case from the original Xbox Live beta.
Get up to four chances to win by posting a comment, reviewing one or both of our podcasts on iTunes, and tweeting about the giveaway. Find the details on our site and be sure to enter by 5 p.m. Pacific on Wednesday, September 29th.
Last week's winners.
Sabanu won the Son of Epic Pax swag bag.
Scrams took the Pax poster pack.
And Ropes won the Mogworld novel.
If you're not familiar with good old games, you probably should be. They're known for selling classic PC games that are DRM-free, typically $10 or less, and often loaded with cool extras such as soundtracks. At least, until this past week when they pulled a little marketing stunt to promote their site. Now, they're known as the site that cried wolf. It started when GOG.com began lamenting via Twitter how sometimes it's really hard being DRM-free, hard to keep things the way they are, and keep management and publishers happy. 2 days later, the online storefront was gone, replaced with an announcement that they were shut down, but would be reborn in some form at a later date.
It didn't take long before the interweb sniffed out the lie, and GOG finally admitted that it was a hoax and that they were simply coming out of an extended beta. GOG.com did indeed relaunch, and its management apologized for the desperate cry for attention, and they tendered this excuse. As a small company, we don't have a huge marketing budget, and this is why we could not miss a chance to generate some buzz. Fans of the service, who initially lamented missed opportunities to purchase favorite games, quickly turned on them. But this didn't prevent the site from being hammered with 20 times its prior peak traffic, at least according to GOG.com, when they came back. Did the ploy work, or will GOG have to earn back our trust?
Comments of the week.
Electric Goldfish was among those angered by the hoax.
I'm surprised that GOG didn't realize just how much gamers like to complain about things. How did they think this was going to pan out? Yes, the apparent shutdown got around to gaming sites faster than a regular old press release, but it seems they don't get the difference between good attention and bad attention. Wolfkin didn't agree with the tactic, but is prepared to shop there again.
I was very disappointed to find out it was a hoax. Not at first. At first I was just so relieved. But then to find out that they thought it was a good idea to let us think they were gone for good, that just kind of makes me a bit angry. As for how it'll affect my business with them, hard to say. I really love their model and the game selection. There's not a lot of places I can find Thinking Things 3, a treasured game from my youth that my sister keeps bugging me for. The honest truth is that it's likely I'll still buy it and other games from them. Tyra Arane, on the other hand, may need to be won back.
This was so unprofessional, which is what upsets me the most. I'm baffled that no one at GOG.com thought this was a bad idea. If they get Planescape Torment, I might buy it. I'm not buying from them again otherwise unless they show they can be trusted.
Spoiler warning, we're gonna pick it apart. Open it up to find the tick, tick, tick of a heart.
PAX Prime 2010 was big on music games. Apart from Rock Band, which we already covered, we tried Instant Jam and Power Gig, Rise of the Sixth String.
Power Gig uses a real guitar, similar to the Pro Guitar in Rock Band 3, but it was painful for me to wield. It's really designed for real guitarists who want to play through songs on a gaming console. Trying to play a plastic guitar-style note chart really hurt my fingers. The audio from that demo didn't come out, lucky for you, but it's just as well, I didn't even finish the song. To be fair, I don't have the calluses that would protect a real guitarist from injury, and I doubt I have the devotion to develop them.
Power Gig also has a unique take on drums, which shine lights up from the floor so you can tap the air above them. This may be a neat solution for drummers with limited space in their studio apartments, but it was jarring to go from ultra-real guitar to air drums.
I had a lot more fun playing Instant Jam, a Facebook game from the folks who delivered that embedded demo of The Secret of Monkey Island that earned some positive feedback on our site earlier this year.
Instant Jam is a browser-based, free-to-play, console-quality music rhythm game, sort of like Guitar Hero or Rock Band, but what's really cool about it is that it will play music that you own in your music library already. So what it does is it looks at the MP3s, AACs, things that you've got on your system, and we've developed a very sophisticated, like, almost like fingerprinting of songs, and it looks and it matches those up. And right now we have over 2,200 note charts, all done by hand. We've hired some of the industry's best. And we're adding currently about 50 to 70 a week. All genres, also it could be music from Germany, it could be country, it could be ska or speed metal punk, surf music. I think you can even play Beethoven's on there right now. And what's cool is the game works with any USB controller that you have from Xbox or 360 or PlayStation, or you can play with a keyboard. You go in your browser and you get a certain number of plays per day and they regenerate, but if you're doing any of the social features, it works. Currently, our beta is in Facebook. You can see your friends. You can challenge them. You can send them virtual goods and gifts. You can purchase virtual goods such as different guitars, frets, notes that actually affect the gameplay. You can also go and purchase songs. So let's say you see a song in our list, but you don't own it, and you're interested in it. You can go right directly to iTunes or Amazon. You can purchase the song for 99 cents. In exchange, you not only get awarded free plays, but you also get awarded virtual currency.
If you follow the site, you may recall that I was a little underwhelmed by Torchlight, which was fun, but paled next to Dungeon Siege, at least for me. But I dropped in on Torchlight 2 at PAX to see how it improved on the original and try out the new co-op mode.
Just go ahead and grab a new character there.
Yeah.
So there's two classes available here, the Railman and the Outlander. The Railman, kind of a melee engineer-y sort of class.
Yeah, give that a try.
Charge-based mechanic. So melee attacks build up charges that will kind of orbit your character, and then different skills consume those charges and automatically level up further. Go ahead and hit multiplayer. Let's join one of their games in progress. And we're in pre-alpha right now, so it's subject to a lot of change.
It's coming out in 2011, right?
Yeah, springish. So that's your right-click attack.
What am I doing?
If you just click on the dude real quick, grab a quest. Actually, you don't even have to. Blah-de-blah-de-blah. Go ahead and just head on and follow the road. I think everybody's popped out of this level and just ran into the town, so.
I need to destroy these guys?
Uh-huh. So left-click will do your primary attack, right-click does your skill attack. So that's your skill attack, but okay. If you just left-click...
I'm really not finding my area.
You can just hold and move.
You're dead?
Yep. Okay. Oh, yeah, he's very dead.
Okay. I couldn't tell. He's got a...
That's your pet. So you got to... Everyone starts with a pet, and the pet can carry loot. You can send it back to town to sell things. It'll attack for you. There he is, helping out a little bit. So you see that little blue deal orbiting you, those are charges. So now if you use your right-click skill, he does a more powerful version.
So he's helping me defeat these guys, okay.
Yep. Now if you use your right-click skill, it basically becomes ranged, so it'll go much further out.
Feels a little more action-y than the first one.
It starts you off a little bit deeper into the monsters, and we've been playing a lot with the combat and as far as generally how physical it is and how many things you can attack at once. Let's go ahead and hit this first option.
So are there any buttons I need to know on the keyboard?
You can use hotkey buttons. So, for instance, you've got health and mana potions
one and
here.
Two here?
Uh-huh. You can map skills to these if you like. But for the most part, we try and keep it as one-hand playable as possible. Multiplayer is a big new feature.
Is it co-op or is it competitive?
It's co-op. We do have the ability to do PvP, but it's probably never going to be really the focus of the game. It's drop in and out, co-op play, so you can just hop into somebody's game. You can, of course, restrict those games and make it so that, you know, it's password protected, or you have specific limitations on entry, or they're guild-only games, or whatever. Also, we do modability, so Torchlight was a very moddable game, and we gave out our mod tools. We're going to retain that for this, so you'll be able to mod multiplayer. So people want to run their own little guild games that are all PvP all the time, you know, with cutthroat loot rules and different classes and, you know, unlimited respecs or whatever they want to do. Mm-hmm. They can set up games to do that. The game is randomized in outdoors as well as, you know, interiors. There's a basically set progression of the game. There's a set story, but the layouts of the individual areas and the events that you see may or may not show up the next playthrough. So, for instance, this guy here on the side of the road being attacked by monsters is a random event. You might or might not see that on a playthrough.
I heard the rumor. This is coming to the Xbox, or you guys haven't announced it?
Possible, but nothing's announced yet.
If Torchlight 2 does come to the consoles, I'll be sorely tempted. Otherwise, I'll probably pass. Still, it does look good, and if you love the first Torchlight, you'll be impressed. Little Big Planet 2, now delayed to January 2011, seemed like a must-try due to the promise of a new grappling mechanic.
Alright, so this Tower of Loot level, that's a really fun platforming, and it kind of showcases the new grappling mode. Now press circle to see the dialogue. Okay.
It was fun, but it didn't quite sell me on the sequel after the original game ramped in difficulty too abruptly and left me and Pikachu fan hanging.
I got some hands-on time with Infamous 2, which was a short, fun demo that had you battle with some new swamp creatures with claw hands for several minutes and then race along electrical wires after a moving vehicle.
That's quite a weapon you have there.
Kind of an electric sword. A little bit of bulletin, not too much.
You probably just go by these guys now.
Yeah, but it's fun. There was nothing show-stopping about the demo, but it was solid and promises more of the same for fans of the original.
I tried Tron Evolution, expecting to be blown away, but the eye-popping booth was more impressive than what I got to play. To be fair, the demo levels are deep into the game. You dodge obstacles on a light cycle, and then jump and battle enemies in an attempt to stay off the grid.
The story is was made in tandem with the filmmakers, because they were all working together next door. It's a unique story set in between the two. Takes place about 1989. It's a story of a program by your name is Adon. You assist Tron in helping protect the city, protect the grid. The elements are all the same as far as what that kind of core aspect of Tron is. You've got the light cycles, you've got the tanks, the recognizers.
I was not getting this.
It's a little tricky. One thing too is that this is a couple hours into the game.
Yeah.
Both in the demo, so it's going to be a little hard at first, but once you get familiar with it, it's a little easier.
One of the most anticipated Xbox Live Arcade games is Comic Jumper from Twisted Pixel, makers of The Maw and Splosion Man. We spoke with their lead engineer about the game.
Mike Henry, I'm the lead programmer at Twisted Pixel.
So tell us about Comic Jumper. That's your big game coming out, right?
Yes, it comes out October 6th. You are Captain Smiley, who is the star of a comic book that really sucks and gets canceled, and that he has to sort of jump into other comic books to pay the bills. The original comic, or Captain Smiley comic, is sort of a 90s Image Comics kind of thing, a modern day comic. And then there's
is that the one where it looks like he's kind of fighting crime on the streets and at night?
Yeah, sort of big moon over the city kind of thing. Yep. And then there's the fantasy genre, which is sort of a Frank Frazetta style Conan painted look.
I played that one. I tried that one on the show floor.
Cool.
Yeah, there was like little raptors coming after you.
Yep. Yeah, raptors.
I hate those guys.
And vultures and stuff. Yep.
Yeah, the vultures pick you up. I was trying to figure out if I could punch them, but they kept.
Yeah, if you hammer the button hard enough, you can knock them out. And then there's a Silver Age 60s Jack Kirby style, like, flat coloring sort of hard outline look. And then there's manga, which is based on acid.
That's the one you just announced, right?
Yes. It's sort of, as opposed to the other comic styles, it's more based on our lack of knowledge of manga. And it's, like, totally just what you would imagine manga might be like if you were to read it.
Is it like the Clerks animated show where they were talking about this is what the Korean animators finished our game and we have no idea what any of this means?
Yeah,
a little stream of consciousness.
Pretty much like that, yeah.
So is this all original IP or do you have any sly references to previous games?
There are some references to previous games. We're giving away downloadable levels for Explosion Man as an unlockable in Comic Jumper.
I'd heard that, yeah.
Yeah, and so, and then there's other little surprise references as well. But yeah, you get cash for completing each mission, and then you can either buy upgrades for yourself or buy unlockables. So there's like concept art and videos and behind the scenes type of stuff, and then also there's a premium theme and the Explosion Man levels, and then once you unlock those in Comic Jumper, then the next time you go and play Explosion Man, you can actually, there's a new level in single player and a new one in multiplayer that you can play.
What was the inspiration for Comic Jumper?
That was actually our creative director has been drawing Captain Smiley since he was in middle school, and so he sort of like built up this mythos around Captain Smiley and has always wanted to make a game based on it. And basically when we heard the idea for what he wanted to do, we all wanted to make that game too. And so we took the characters that he had already created back in middle school and just kind of beefed them up and fleshed them out and added more new ones and created the game from that.
So as busy gamers, we're always concerned about being able to save your game immediately. I noticed that when I was playing that the checkpoints were pretty close together, so it was pretty easy. If I messed up,
yep,
creamed, then I would just start back a few, not very far back.
Yeah, the life system in the game is totally sort of if you do really well and don't die, then you get a higher score with more money at the end of the level. But if you die, we tried not to punish you too much. We have checkpoints sort of interspersed after every hard encounter, so once you get past something, you don't have to do it again, generally. And then we do allow you, after any level, it immediately saves the game, and so you don't have to.
So you have to finish the level to save the progress. You can't save the progress at a checkpoint?
You cannot save mid-level, though.
Okay.
Yeah, for technical reasons.
Do you anticipate DLC for this title in addition to the actual game?
There's actually nothing planned right now, but we are sort of waiting with bated breath to see if there's an opportunity for that. We definitely don't like to make the DLC too early before we know that for sure that there's a demand for it. Because actually, we kind of got burned a little bit on the Maw for that. We actually finished the game, and then it wasn't going to come out for a while, and so we made some DLC in the meantime. And then it sort of, the game released, and then not too much late after that, the DLC released, and everybody sort of assumed that we were holding back content from the original game instead of giving them something extra, and so it didn't really go over that well. And so we, just want to make sure that we're actually continuing to pay the bills.
So hypothetically, would you add additional art styles if you added the DLC?
Yeah, that probably would make the most sense, as we would... we have like 3 levels per comic book in the game right now, and so probably just like another set of 3 levels for each set of DLC that would be a totally different art style. It is a single player only. We actually started at the beginning of the project trying to do a multiplayer, because we were thinking it'd be like a Gunstar Heroes or Contra or something where it would be a natural fit for 2 players to play through together. But then the more we got through the development process, and we have all these like cinematic camera angles and different, like, it switches gameplay modes on you all the time, and it started to feel like the second player either was sort of messing up all the awesome transitions and shots, or he felt like a second-class citizen and the second player just wasn't really having any fun. He was just along for the ride. And so we decided that we just wanted to focus on the single player and make that as awesome as possible.
And do you need to be a fan of comics to appreciate this game?
I would say no. I think if you are a fan of comics, obviously there's a lot more in-jokes and things that you'll get. But we definitely consciously made an effort to not make that like the only source of humor so that people who are not comic book fans would be lost.
Another Xbox Live arcade game with some buzz is Bangio HD.
Bangio is in the heritage of the old school arcade shooter. Treasure is kind of known for making hardcore arcade shooters, and Bangio is a series that's been around since the Dreamcast. Yeah. We last published the DS version, which is Bangio Spirits, to great critical review as well as great fan review. But one of the things that I think people really wanted when they played that game was, I want to see on a bigger screen, and I want to be able to see like all the missiles explode, right? So with the Xbox Live Arcade, Bangio HD Missile Fury has kind of found a home now. So it's controlled chaos. Again, Treasure's known for developing punishingly hard arcade shooter type games, and unfortunately, it's not for the faint of heart, but at the same time, extremely rewarding. So if you stick with it and you actually keep playing, you'll start to find that you figure out the trick to finishing these really incredibly tough levels, and they're immensely satisfying. So if you have the patience and the gumption to stick with a challenging shooter, I think the reward is huge. The game itself consists of 50 story mode levels, and then another 60 bonus levels, which are unlocked afterward. And then on top of that, there's also an editor. So there's a very robust editor in the game that allows you to edit levels that are already in the game, as well as create new levels. And you can upload those and share those with friends over Xbox Live. It's the basics are dual stick control, where you're given with two weapons, default two weapons to start each level. Depending how the level's designed, you may get weapon drops, like in this case, where I'm picking up now a bounding laser. You get the ability to use a super weapon like a multi-directional counterattack, which is really handy to kind of control all this chaos that's erupting around you. You also have a dash attack that will also allow you to dash in and out of trouble. Gives you a little bit of a short burst of speed and invulnerability to help you get through some of this craziness. I think the nice thing about Treasure's designs is it may look crazy, but you've always got the right tools to actually succeed. As you're firing away and you're making direct contact, you're constantly stringing together combos, which will help build up your multi-directional attack. So you're never, you're never too far away from getting another multi-directional counterattack super weapon, which is really very important. As you destroy targets, you'll also have fruit drops, which will replenish your health. So even though it may look really hard, from the first perception, as you start to play, you start to see that there's a method to the madness, there's a logic involved, and that even though it seems impossible, it really isn't. So it's kind of, let's put it this way, it's a good kind of introduction to the hardcore arcade shooter style for people who are going like, oh, that looks really cool and kind of fun, but I don't know if I can handle that. These games are designed well enough that if you pick it up and play, you're going to have fun doing it, regardless of how well you do right away, or if you decide to invest a little bit of time and develop your skills over the course of the game.
Yeah, watching you play, it actually reminds me a little bit of Contra and Geometry Wars.
Yeah. It's kind of like Geometry Wars on steroids. Yeah. It gets that crazy. There are times when I can actually, let me see if I can find that level, where I can actually unload like 1,000 missiles. If you allow enemy missiles to come within this this yellow counterattack zone, which is around, what you see around your character, and then you unleash that multi-directional attack, you'll actually be able to disperse up to 1,000 missiles. So it's like counterintuitive, and at the same time, it makes perfect sense. It's an Xbox Live Arcade exclusive. We're targeting a November release, and it'll be 800 points.
I did play Bangio HD for several minutes, and I can definitely see its appeal. It really is amazing, but it's also very hard, and there are no checkpoints. So if you die, you start over. I did get quite far into the first level with a little practice, but I didn't finish it. It's not really busy gamer friendly, but if you're a fan of beautiful and painfully difficult action games, Bangio HD might be right for you.
Ask your doctor if Bangio HD is right for you. Side effects may include insomnia, dry eye syndrome, tendonitis, and an overpowering craving for fruit.
We met with Telltale Games not to discuss their upcoming Back to the Future game, the venerated Sam & Max series, or the intriguing Poker Night at the Inventory.
No, they wanted to chat about Puzzle Agent, and with good reason. It's a pretty solid, story-driven puzzle game with high production values that you probably have overlooked.
My name is Jake Rodkin, Sean Vanneman,
and Graham Hannibal.
Puzzle Agent is a story and puzzle game. It's very much in the vein of something like Professor Layton type game. There's, you know, a few sort of games in that style where you're going through a story and then a logic or sort of spatial puzzle will come up and you have to solve through it. We all like those kind of games. We always thought, especially Graham, I think you came up with a pitch of this. What if the story and characters were actually sort of interesting?
Yeah, well, a story that interested me.
That interests you.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Yeah. What do I like?
What do I want?
It turns out we all like the same thing, though, like, which is really cool. So, I mean, the idea being that we have these puzzles that we know we want to get to. So Graham kind of created this character, Nelson Tethers, who is the single agent of the FBI's Division of Puzzle Research, and has just not had a case in a while, lives in a dusty basement, and gets called out to Scoggins, Minnesota, to go on this... What is not really an adventure. It's like solve this mystery that unfolds over the course of the game.
Mystery of the missing erasers.
Yes. There's an eraser factory, and it's closed. And it's only important because it's the eraser factory that supplies the White House with all of their erasers. So Nelson goes out to Scoggins to figure out what's up with this eraser factory. Turns out there may have been a murder. And you're kind of going around town, talking to all these people who don't really want to talk to you, and are all a little skittish of something. And you kind of explore the mythology of this town. There is this kind of like this Norse cult that really believes in nature and these hidden people who live in the forest. And you don't really know what that's about, but they kind of seem like they're up to no good. So you kind of follow the story through there.
The other weird thing about the town is that many of the people in the town are afflicted with this sort of... It's kind of like a Beautiful Mind-esque thing where they sort of start seeing constructs in the world and can't get... to sort of make logical sense of things. So you'll see someone who's in a restaurant just obsessively rearranging the food on their plate, and they're like, I can't do it. And to Nelson, who's this, he's the only guy in the FBI in their puzzle research division, so he's like, oh, puzzles, I know this. So he sort of extracts information from people by sort of helping them with these weird issues.
Yeah, so you don't have to say a word, right?
I'm just saying, like, I think the game did such a good job of capturing the vibe that I'd hoped it had, which is essentially all through the story and adventure, you get the sense that there's this much bigger picture that you can never quite get your hands around. There's always an extra thing that exposing a little bit more. And for me personally, it's the way I like mysteries to unfold, very much like Twin Peaks. I think that sort of sense that there's always something bigger going on that you're not quite getting a chance to see.
And that was really important, like, in development, because, you know, people, like, when you're putting the story together, it's really easy to be like, well, we have to, like, tie up all these loose ends. And it was kind of like a mantra of the team to be like, no, you don't. This story starts, and Nelson is in his office, sitting down with the New York Times crossword puzzle, very happy, nice and crisp and clean. And, like, this is it. He's in his zone. He's like, ah, yes, the first crossword of the day. And he starts to do it, and he falls asleep. And he has this dream that an astronaut comes and visits him and opens his mask, and he sees something horrible that we never see. And he wakes up, and he rips his crossword to shreds. And the first puzzle is putting it back together. And then once you put it back together, there's a message written on the crossword puzzle that we never really explained. Did he write that? Did this astronaut who visited him in his dreams? Or was he actually in the office? It's really important for us to keep that ambiguity. There's a time later in the game where Nelson hits his head, and we go do that again in a very, very different way. And it was really important for us to not explain that sort of thing, because for us, we know what we would want to see over the course of many episodes of this. Or we know how we want it to feel, and if we started tying those loose ends up, I don't think we would have gotten the feeling that Graham was hoping for. There's definitely, you always feel like you're a few steps behind what's actually happening, but in a good way, in an intriguing way, not like an I'm lost way.
What kind of puzzles can we expect in the game? Are they word puzzles?
We can walk through a few.
You have the town!
This copy's very early into the game, but I can load up a couple here.
Did that map.
I guess. This is the world map of Scoggins. Let's send Nelson back to downtown. This game is also fully voiced on all platforms. You can meet all the various people in town and talk to them about things.
How long a game is this, would you say?
3 to 4 hours, I'd say.
3 to 4 is what I've always been told.
Yeah.
People have played it.
Stephen Hawking would blow right through it, probably. But, you know, it just depends on how you... Sometimes you get stuck on those puzzles, and you just don't want to use a hint. There is a hint system. You find pieces of gum in the environment, because gum helps Nelson think. And he gets to Scoggins, and he's like, oh, God, I have no more gum left. Gum really, like, puts me at ease. And he goes to buy gum, and they're like, oh, no, we're out of gum. Next gum shipment's not till spring, sorry. So you have to go around and find gum, like... underneath desks and stuff.
Nice. When you get to the very end of the game, we just put you in like puzzle solving mode where it unlocks any that you missed if you want to, and you can go back and resolve them.
So you said you looked at Professor Layton. Was that like an inspiration for you? Did you say, hey, I could do this better, or?
Inspiration for sure. I don't play a ton of games, but every now and again I just get an insane Jones for playing some game. My wife has a DS. She had Professor Layton on it, and I was like, I'll just try this. And as soon as I started playing it, I was like, oh my God, I love the way the mechanic of this works. And it's such a great vehicle for telling a story with. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of animated cartoons on YouTube the last bunch of years, and I was like, man, I wanted to wrap a story around that game mechanic. So it was just a good sort of starting point and inspiration for us. And then I pitched it to Telltale, and the timing was kind of right for that sort of a project. And everybody was like, yeah, we can do this, we can do that. And it just started evolving from there. One thing you guys did, though, which I think it's a very tall task, is you guys tried really hard to incorporate the puzzles into the actual, you know, what was going on with the story in the game, which I think was
a big deal for us versus Layton, because in Professor Layton, it's always like, let me look inside this keyhole. Oh, there's a slider puzzle in there. And it's like, the puzzles are cool and the vibe is cool, but we thought... if we get those a little closer together.
Actually integrating it.
Well, as soon as we kind of had to concede that people were puzzle afflicted, that people had this sort of like, this touchedness to them, they were like obsessed with something, it allowed us to put it like around the puzzles and whatever they were obsessed with, which was really nice. And the art supports that.
It makes all the people creepier that way too.
Yeah.
So it's a little psychonauts.
There is kind of, I mean, and the fact that it's in their heads a little bit, yeah, that's a really interesting, we love psychonauts. That's a really interesting kind of take on it. Yeah. Yeah, it's that.
It's a spiritual successor to Psychonauts. You didn't even know it.
Unless say that. Tim will drop a brick on my head, and then he'll pick it up off my head and drop it on Jake's head.
It'll be nice to Graham.
Yeah, it'll be nice to Graham. But Tim will kill
guarantees.
Us.
No,
yeah.
So where can people get the game?
PC and Mac, you get it from TelltaleGames.com, or it's also available on Steam on the PC and Mac. Yeah, and then App Store for iPad, iPhone, and the Wii Shop channel soon.
What we're playing.
This week I finished the Minerva's Den DLC for Bioshock 2, and I am extremely impressed. I really enjoyed it. It was much deeper than I expected. There are three levels. The first two are about the same as your average Bioshock level. The third one is fairly short, but is very intense. There are some new things in the game. One thing that's different is that you cannot upgrade your weapons, so you have to really keep an eye out for the specialty weapons. The upgraded weapons are around, but they're laying there where you can pick them up, or you pick them up as you take people out. What I was especially blown away by, though, was the story. It's very rich, and it has a nice twist at the ending that, in retrospect, I should have seen coming, but I didn't. It has kind of a Titanic feel at the ending. You could almost hear that god-awful song that everybody was singing in the 90s playing in the background. But it's very affecting. It really picks up what was good about that sort of tragic love story. And there is a point where someone will tell you to take your time. And I strongly recommend that you do just that. Look at everything. Get up close. There are details that you will miss if you do not take a moment to stop and focus in, and it will add so much to the story. I was almost crying.
Wow. Well, my story's a little less breathtaking. I finally got Halo Reach last week and played through a few levels, and I'm kind of underwhelmed. The game is solid, like a squad-based Master Chief fest. You're the sixth member of a team of Spartans, only you don't really need to look out for your squad mates. I am enjoying the campaign, which apparently picks up near the end, so I'm hopeful that my mind will still be blown. And the game is immensely feature-rich and polished. It's definitely a great game for the money. But so far, I'm just not feeling the magic that sucked me into the original or pulled me through the first two sequels. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture a match in your inventory. DLC highlights.
New WiiWare additions are Triple Throwing Sports and the Very Hungry Caterpillar's ABCs. On Virtual Console, look for Arrow the Acrobat 2. DSiWare updates include Everyday Soccer, 10-Second Run, and Nintendo Countdown Calendar.
The PlayStation 3 store received Sonic Adventure, the free Play Memories Photo Viewer, the iPet Race Car Driver Pack, and demos for DJ Hero 2, Enslaved Odyssey of the West, NBA Elite 11, and MOVE titles Kung Fu Rider and Sports Champions.
Both PS3 and Xbox 360 stores offered Blade Kitten, Deathspank Thongs of Virtue, the Red Dead Redemption Liars and Cheats Pack, and another Skate 3 expansion. Xbox Live Marketplace also has Serious Sam HD, The Second Encounter, Alien Breed 2, Assault, and the My Sims Sky Heroes demo.
As usual, more complete listings of the past week's DLC can be found at BusyGamerNews.com.
On Twitter, we encourage you to follow Game Watcher and Girl Got Game. That's GRRL Got Game. We often tweet news that isn't big enough to deserve an entry on the site or has a very limited shelf life. We also have a BGN Community Twitter list. If you're not on it and want to be, send Game Watcher an at reply.
We also encourage you to join the Busy Gamers Facebook group and our Busy Gamer News Facebook fan page.
If you use Stitcher Radio, search for Busy Gamer and favorite us there. And if you enjoy the podcast, please like us there too. You can actually do this each time you listen.
Also, we'd love it if you rate and review us on iTunes. This week, it could help you win the Halo Relics Pack.
Some of the music in this podcast came from Mevio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.mevio, that's MEVIO.com. You can find details and links for these and other songs at BusyGamerNews.com, WAC Podcast.
I feel fantastic, and I never felt as good as how I do right now. Except for maybe when I think of how I felt that day, when I felt the way that I do right now. Right now. I feel fantastic, and I never felt as good as how I do right now. Except for maybe when I think of how I felt that day, when I felt the way that I do right now. Right now. Right now.